You're listening to Eureka on Monocle 24, brought to you by the team behind The Entrepreneurs. I'm Daniel Bage. Whitney Bromberg Hawkins is the co-founder and CEO of Flowerbox, the florist trusted by some of the biggest names in fashion, retail, and hospitality. The rapidly growing company launched in 2015, backed by some of Whitney's friends and contacts in luxury fashion, including the founder of Net-a-Porter. Whitney spent two decades as the PA to Tom Ford, first joining him at Gucci. And in working for the designer, Whitney noticed a particular habit and signature of luminaries in the high fashion world, sending their friends huge bouquets of a single variety of flower. Whitney also loved to head to markets to buy flowers for herself, and when it was time to move on in her career, Whitney had her perfect business idea: create a direct-to-consumer company run like a fashion brand. Beyond bouquets, Flowerbox has collaborated with top designers on a series of vases, has created bespoke fragrances, and takes on events and special projects with regular clients including Louis Vuitton, Dior, Tory Burch, and The River Cafe. The company has just sealed a second round of investment topping £4 million and has expanded beyond London into France, Belgium, Ireland, Germany, and the Netherlands, soon to arrive in New York City. Here's Whitney now with the story of Flowerbox.
So I grew up in Dallas, Texas, which was a wonderful place to grow up, but I always felt like there was something more for my life than what there was in Dallas, Texas. And I was really hungry to sort of explore and move to New York. So the first chance I got was university. I went to Columbia University in New York City, which was like all my dreams come true at once. Just magical being sort of 18, living in New York, everything that the city had to offer. I studied French literature at Columbia, which at the time seemed like a useless major, but I had this passion for France and this fantasy of being like Jackie Kennedy and moving to Paris and working for French Vogue. So that was sort of the end goal at that point. And when I graduated from school, my grandparents gave me a graduation check, and I decided I was going to take that money, move to Paris, and go and work for French Vogue. Unbeknownst to me at the time, they were not hiring. So that sort of foiled my plan. But after months of pavement pounding, a friend of a friend said that Tom Ford at the time was looking for an assistant at Gucci, which was in the Gucci absolute heyday. It was sort of right after his white dress collection, if you remember that, when Madonna wore the blue velvet tuxedo at the MTV Music Awards and shouted out that she was wearing Gucci. So it was really this amazing moment in fashion. And luckily, I got the job. It was really the dream job. I mean, it was as fabulous as it sounds. I had an apartment in Paris, an apartment in London, an apartment in Milan. We were going back and forth between the two. It was right when Gucci Group was formed. Tom had dealt with the acquisition of Stella McCartney, Balenciaga, McQueen, Bottega Veneta. So it was a really exciting moment in fashion. And I had the most wonderful job. I also had the opportunity to work closely to Tom. And there's no better teacher or better person to learn from than him. And a lot of it I learned with him. I left Gucci with him in 2004 when he started up his own brand. So it was a really great opportunity. I mean, we were shopping for waste paper baskets on the King's Road together, really starting a brand from scratch. So he launched eyewear and then launched the beauty brand and then launched Tom Ford menswear. So it was really, you know, I got a lot of experience in seeing how to build a brand, from designing the logo to the shopping bags, to the tissue paper, to the real conception of a brand from the ground up. Working next to someone like Tom, I honestly could have stayed there for my entire life because it was never dull. And the second it got even remotely monotonous, he would do something crazy like direct a movie. So then it was doing all the publicity for the movie, and the learning curve was always very steep. So I was very happily stayed there forever. Also, I met my wonderful husband at Gucci. We were an office romance, fell in love there. So another reason why we could have happily both stayed there. But I realized, first of all, I was buying everything in my life online. You know, as a working mom, we then had two children. I was buying my groceries, buying my clothes on Matches or on Net-a-Porter. And I realized that when I wanted to buy flowers, you know, having flowers in my house was something that was always very special to me. I was going to the Covent Garden Flower Market before work, you know, usually in a pencil skirt and stilettos, buying flowers for my house because I didn't want to go to a florist and pay three times too much for a stem. I also thought, as a proposition, just having armfuls of a single type of flower in a vase was so much more beautiful to me than having those sort of mixed, tortured bouquets that you can find that are sort of favored by florists. So I thought, for me, 50 tulips in your house on the kitchen table in your house is done. So why the fussiness of all those mixed arrangements with baby's breath and a lot of greenery, etc.? I was also turning 40, Tom had always said to me, it's so important to have a 10-year plan. And my 10-year plan in my 20s was so clear. You know, it was career, career, career. Then in my 30s, having a family was important to me. So it was very important for me to start a young family. And then I was turning 40. And I thought, is this what I want to be doing for the next 10 years? And is this where I see myself seating these editors at fashion shows? They weren't even editors anymore. They were sort of bloggers and they were younger and younger. They were complaining about their seats and I didn't really care. So I was also pregnant with my third child. And I thought, this confluence of events was like the perfect storm. It was now or never. So I had this moment where it was like, I'm either going to leave or I'm doing this for the rest of my life, both of which would have been fine, but it was like a do or die moment. I thought naively that it could be sort of a side hustle and I could keep my great job with my great salary and great team and do it on the side. But it became very clear very fast that the idea had legs and that the potential was huge. Natalie Massenet was one of our first customers and is a good friend who founded Net-a-Porter. And she said, the second you're ready to raise money, come to me because I'd love to invest. And there were a handful of people that were like, this is going to be really big. I realized quite early on that it did have legs, that there really was an appetite for this, and that in order for it to be really big, I had to really dedicate myself to doing it. For me, the most beautiful way to consume flowers is single stem bunches. Also, working in fashion, I realized that when Miuccia or Carl or Calvin or Ralph sent flowers, not to me, alas, but to Tom, that they were always sending single stem bunches of flowers. It was always 50 pale pink roses or 50 white orchids, or it was never those mixed bouquets. So I really am sticking to my guns with the single stem offering. Of course, every once in a while, there's a phone call saying, can you do mixed? You know, and of course we can do that. But I really think it's important to stick with what makes us different and stick with our like USP, which is single stem market fresh flowers delivered to your door and nothing fussier than that. It became very clear that we were working with a lot of brands and a lot of gifting for brands such as Dior, Vuitton, et cetera. And then they'd say, oh, we're doing an event. Can you do this event? So while I didn't want to become at all an events or a production person, these people, you know, or a woman or a man who bought flowers from Us Weekly were saying, oh, we're having a dinner party on Friday night. Can you arrange the flowers? So it became very clear we needed to have sort of an events arm to our business, which has become actually a really great revenue stream, first of all, but also for me, a great showcase of what we can do. So I feel like our big events, and we've done events around the world for Vuitton in Dubai to Tory Burch in Paris to Michael Kors in London, etc. They've become sort of a showcase and produce this sort of halo effect of what we can do. And then it leads to so-and-so who's buying a small bunch of tulips for their friend's engagement party. So I think it really showcases the brand the way a fashion show, you know, or an haute couture show showcases what the brand can do and then leads to lipstick sales. I didn't really know anything at all about investment. I didn't know about fundraising. I didn't know any of that. But it became very clear by the reaction that we needed more than one van. We needed a website that wasn't a sort of bunk 20,000 pound website that we bought plug and play. We needed a sophisticated website that would save credit card details that you could ship to multiple addresses. It just became very clear early on that this level of customer that we had from the get-go was a customer that needed these things. So back to the conversation I had had earlier with Natalie, I was very embarrassed because I felt like I was asking people for money. I didn't realize that I was also providing them a great opportunity to invest in an exciting brand. It became clear we needed to raise money. I asked Natalie if she was serious. She's like, yes. Do you mind if I bring Carmen Bousquet, who's like the famed investor and fairy godmother of so many young brands. She was an early investor in Net. She said, do you mind if I bring Carmen on board? I was like, absolutely not. And Mark Seba, who was her CEO and president at Net-a-Porter. So I was very, very, very lucky to have that sort of as our anchor first investors. Mark later became our chairman and helped us really establish the most incredible foundation at Flowerbox and instilled this rigorous discipline in all of us. He sort of saw the potential and saw where we were going with the company, and so realized how important it was to have sort of strong discipline and the most incredible foundations. Was so lucky for that. So it was always very clear to me from the beginning this was going to be an international and global proposition. For me, I wanted to create the chic alternative to Interflora. So where you had consistency, which I think is the thing that is really missing from floral gifting, and especially international floral gifting. So we launched first in London, then the next step was across the UK. And soon after that, we launched in France, Germany, Ireland, and Belgium. This week, we're launching all across Europe in 17 different countries, so including Greece, parts of Spain, Italy, Poland, the Netherlands. We're opening a Euro store whereby you can purchase in Euros in all of these different territories. So that's happening this week, and then we're launching in New York in May, which is in equal parts thrilling and terrifying. I really don't feel like the boss. I really feel like we're all in the trenches together. And I hope that's what the team feels like. I am so, so proud of the people that work for Flowerbox. They all get the vision. They're all part of it. A couple weeks ago when that big piece in the New York Times came out, they were all like, oh, congratulations. I'm like, no, we have done this. We have done this. You have done this. From every single person has been a part of this. And the fact that we're, you know, people in New York are talking about what we're doing in this little warehouse in Acton is incredible. So hopefully they feel inspired and excited too by what we're creating.
Thank you very much to Whitney Bromberg-Hawkins for coming in to share the story of Flowerbox. The show was edited by Alex Port-Felix. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.